It's time for JT the Brick.
This is a new regime led by Antonio Pierce, a former player who's won a Super Bowl.
Our vision is clear. Win a division.
He's the right guy at the right time for this job. Right guy, right time to get the Raiders back, not to greatness, to the playoffs.
Our intention of how we play, the execution of our play, the mindset of our team, that's what I'm looking for.
I would love to see Antonio Pierce have the opportunity to coach this Raider team. I think he deserves it.
JT the Brick.
This coach wants to be more physical. He wants to put his hands on players.
You got the Jordan rules, and I'm calling out from now on, as long as I'm here, the Patrick Mahomes rules.
I like when the head coach says this. I'm a season ticket holder.
Squeezing by the throat.
Antonio Pierce wants to get the black hole back to where it was in the Coliseum in Oakland. Let's help him.
And now, here's JT the Brick.
Welcome back, everybody. Hour number two on the flagship of the Raiders, Raider Nation Radio and the Raiders mobile app. Hope everyone's having a great day today. Cold today. Windy today, man. Windy today. Not a good day if you're a golfer or things blowing into the pool and trash cans blowing around. Windy, colder day in Vegas, but we'll get back on track here. The breaking news, the Raiders training camp, Costa Mesa, the vote went down. Last night, 7-0 unanimous vote for the Raiders to hold weeks of their practice training camp out in Costa Mesa. As I said earlier, I think this is basically just about the weather and also the Raider brand in Southern California, how big it is. There's a lot of Raider fans in Southern California. I don't know what the ability is going to be for you to go to practice or not. I'm sure the Raiders will put that out in a press release, and then I'll read it when I know about it. But I think from a weather perspective, the Raiders will have an easier time practicing in cooler temperatures. And look, a lot of people said on our live feed, we're on YouTube live right now. You can see us live if you go to YouTube, JT the Brick YT, and please subscribe to the page. Look, there could be forest fires, wildfires, air quality. We don't know what the air quality is going to be like. We're assuming it'll be okay. Real close to the ocean there. I know that park, that location. From the Chargers being there, really close to Newport Beach, Costa Mesa. There's an airport right there, 10 minutes away. So if you're a Raider fan, you want to fly in or just have festivities and be around that atmosphere. And I think it'll be great for Raider fans in Southern California, just like it would be great for Raider fans in Northern California if the Raiders head back to Napa. It's just training camp. And the goal of training camp is not daycare. Day camp, as one of the alumni told me. He used that term. Day camp. He goes, it's too much day camp around here. I go, what do you mean? He said, well, when we were practicing back in the day, it was hard. We had six preseason games. We had two-a-days in pads. It was hot. We partied. We were together. There were no wives. There were no girlfriends. But we had a good time, wink, wink. We knew what we were doing up there in Santa Rosa. Any Raider fan over the age of 40 or 50 knows exactly what I'm talking about. This isn't daycare. It's training camp. So you're not going to be able to. And I'm sure they're going to have a family day where the family's going to be out there. But if you're going to spend a couple of weeks away from your wife and kids and not change diapers and not walk your dog and do all that, that's the least you can do to compete in the football league and try to make the playoffs. Is it going to be more strict and intense? I don't know. I mean, training camp, it's not what it used to be. There's only a certain amount of days and pads and padded practices. But the insiders will be there, the Vinny, Vic, and Deshaun Reed, and everybody who covers the team is going to be out there. I'll be out there. We'll see what happens with our schedule here with the show. Q's a grinder. I'm sure Q's going to have everything set up there for a certain amount of time for us out there, and we'll bring you all the information we need. I'll get out to more of my monologue coming up in a minute. Gangsta Raider, wanted to get you up here. What do you think of this move? Thanks for calling in.
Hey, what's up, JT? You know, I love it. You know what I'm saying? I think it's a thank you to us Raider fans here in Southern California. Because there's a lot of other football organizations that have training camp out here. And I think this is good for the Raiders to reclaim L.A. because this is still Raider Nation. You know what I'm saying? Whether people believe it or not, even though the Rams have won the Super Bowl, it barely moved the needle, as you like to say. It barely moved the needle in Los Angeles as far as fans because it's still Raider Nation fan out here. And also, I think it's a good thing because it's a people to get back to, the Raiders were born out here in California, so it's good to get back to the birth state or whatever and let the new fans, the new players soak up some of this California-ism. And also, I think it's good because it's also good for the economy. The local economy is good, you know what I'm saying? Also, a slap in the face to Kroenke, who wanted to keep the Raiders out of the area. Now we're back in the area, you know what I mean? And it's also good. But the only thing I don't like about it was because, you know, when we was practicing out there in Vegas and we was getting up extra early in the morning, I think that was good for us when we played back east. You know what I'm saying? When we had New York games, our body clocks was used to already getting up and practicing early, early in the morning. Do you know if they still going to keep that schedule or if they're going to go back to regular? Because that's the only thing I think is a negative about not practicing in Vegas. But otherwise, I'm all with it. You know what I mean? And also, I think, you know, fans in California, especially the Southern California fans, we the ones that take the trip up there, you know, pretty much, and support the Raider organization. So I appreciate it. I think it's a big thank you. And, you know, a lot of the new Raider fans can mix in with us, and we can show them the way and be a more united Raider Nation. You know how it is, JT. You part, you part of that black hole. You know how we get out.
Absolutely. Raiders, appreciate it. Gangsta Radio, right about a lot there. Appreciate your call, as always. Thanks for checking in. It is a salute to the nation. It's a nice convenience. This is all about convenience. The Raiders don't have to go to Costa Mesa. They built a beautiful facility in Henderson. It's just too hot. You know, Josh McDaniels said it indirectly. John Gruden, everybody said it. It's not ideal. So they built, Mark built a beautiful facility where you can go indoors. There's sometimes out here in Vegas, we have these monsoon rain. If you had a monsoon rain, you can go inside. It's not ideal to practice inside. You can practice inside. That's a benefit to the Raiders. The goal of the organization is not to practice inside. You can, and one of the good things about practicing inside is noise. You want to get ready for a Chiefs game, you go inside, you take the speakers inside, and you blare it. All that's good. But, you know, in July and August, if you live in Vegas as long as I have, you got to leave if you can. And I know there's cops and there's firemen and there's construction workers and bartenders, and Bobby's raising his hands. A lot of us can't leave. I look at my wife every year and say, get me out of here. And I love Vegas. Just please get me out of here in July for a couple of weeks. Please. And, you know, that's, they're going to Costa Mesa. I think it's fantastic. It's a nice lifestyle out there, man, if you don't have to deal with the traffic. Now, if you're in Costa Mesa and you have to drive to, you know, the Valley, then that's a nightmare. If you're in Costa Mesa and you got to drive to LA Live where the Lakers play, that's a nightmare. But if you're just hanging in and around Costa Mesa, it's pretty cool. I don't know what the schedule is going to be. I don't. I mean, I'm sure there's going to be days where Antonio Pierce is going to want to practice early. They're going to have night practices, of course, under the lights. Whatever they're going to do, they'll figure it out, and I think they'll get it right. I think they'll get it right, and it's a good thing. I've been dying to talk about this. And the only thing that I'm more upset about is tomorrow, we were led to believe by the NFL, was supposed to be schedule release, and they moved it to May 15th. So we'll have some special programming that day. That is arguably my favorite, one of my favorite shows of the year is schedule release. It is. It's just fantastic because that's when we are able to put our schedules together and figure out what when we're going to travel and what we're going to do and all of that. I love that. So that's coming up here. We got a lot of other big things that are happening, but that's the big thing on my schedule that is coming up. I got Coaches vs. Cancer. Coaches vs. Cancer is coming up here in a couple of weeks. So you're going to hear Lon Kruger. You're going to hear a couple coaches on. I'm back emceeing the kickoff of Coaches vs. Cancer at the Nomad Pool at Park MGM with Sean Farnham and DJ Allen. And, man, that's one of my proudest accomplishments is I get invited every year to help emcee that event as we raise millions of dollars, millions, for Coaches vs. Cancer. So that's a big deal on my calendar. And then June 6th and 7th, I'll be in Chicago for Mike Ditka, hosting Gridiron Greats, their annual induction into the Gridiron Greats Hall of Fame. Two of the individuals getting in are Steve Largent and Mike Singletary. So two icons of the NFL. So I'm looking forward to a quick road trip that's coming out there. All right. As we get rolling here, I'm going to say goodbye to our friends on YouTube. We're going to play a portion of Champ Kelly, who spoke earlier today. It was nice. I didn't get a chance to hear it, so this will be the first time I hear it. Part of the brass of the Silver and Black under Tom Telesco. So earlier today, here's a few minutes of Champ Kelly as he met the media.
Let me start off before we get into questions. First of all, thank you all for being here. I just wanted to say, you know, our country for their support. I've received texts, emails, DMs, people have come up to me at my daughter's games. Just really thank you guys and really appreciate it. Secondly, to our scouts in particular, since the draft just happened, our college scouts, JoJo Wooden, Brandon Juergen, Lenny McGill, Andy Dangler, DeJuan Daniels, Ryan Gravel, John Hill, Curtis Knox, Calvin Branch, Matt Hand, Kyle Caballero, Sean Herrock, Grant Ravini, Jalen Morris, Kyrell Michael, Nick Papagno. There's probably some others that I missed, along with our pro scouts. And this group did an excellent job doing the draft process. They began the year scouting for a particular brand of football. They had to change gears 8 weeks in. They adapted to that, and then they adjusted again once Tom was hired full-time. It's a testament to their resilience and their professionalism. I also think I think it speaks measures about Tom, you know, his character, that he recognized their efforts and their works. And I'm excited that, you know, most of these guys are going to be back with us as we forge forward. Lastly, to my wife and my girls, you know, they were with me through the highs and the lows. You know, they trust me in all of our moves. My wife said, regardless of what happens, she was ready. I just want to tell them that I love them for how they love me. In my initial press conference, I gave a shout out to my middle child, Chloe. It was her birthday. But my youngest child told me that if I'm ever at another press conference, that it's her turn. So, Caroline, I love you, baby. I'm proud of you. And she scored her first club soccer goal this past weekend. So we're excited about that. With that, let's get to some questions.
Champ, this is Hondo. You alluded to it at the beginning, thanking all your scouts, but you were really charged by Dave Ziegler when you got here to overhaul the scouting department. And Tom Telesco has multiple times commented about how impressed he was. How satisfied are you with that department that you guys overhauled and its production in this last two drafts?
You know, just extremely proud of, you know, the complete staff, how they work, how we've gelled together, identifying a Raiders way, adapting and adjusting to that, evaluating players and identifying players that are the right players for us. They may not be the right players for the other 31 teams, but they fit us. And our guys have done an excellent job of doing that. And I'm proud to work with them and excited to keep working with them.
Hey, Champ. I was going to ask you, I'm sure you heard about today, Terron Arnold said you guys had a coin flip for that 13th pick between him and Brock Bowers. Just want to ask you what went down in the war room when 13 was on the clock.
Yeah, I can't confirm that at all. You know, Terry is a good player. I'm excited to watch his career and watch him play. You know, but we drafted Brock. You know, we're excited to get him here. And I don't think anyone else in our whole, you know, draft room felt any other way.
Hey, Champ, Adam Hill from the Review Journal. I was just wondering, you know, you guys were probably pretty far down the road when Tom came in and got the job on this draft. How much cohesion was there in the department between from before he was there until after he was here and as you guys trying to make that transition?
No, very good question, Adam. There was a lot of cohesion. Again, a testament to Tom. You know, he came in, he didn't come in and say, hey, we're just doing everything my way. It's my way or the highway. He came in and he listened to, you know, our scouts, our evaluations. And I think it's a testament to the scouts because the quality of work they had done throughout the fall was so good that he could come in and really get a feel for them and also get a feel for how they viewed the players that were draft eligible. You know, so I've been through, you know, multiple systems now, and no matter how you term the verbiage, like ultimately all you're doing is you're vertically stacking a position group and then you're horizontally stacking that position group across the other position groups. It doesn't matter what system that you're doing, and all we're trying to do is find the best players, the best Raiders for us.
Champ, it's Hondo again. When we talk to these players or interview their coaches or people near them, they all seem to have the same kind of mentality. They're the guys that would have been there in the offseason this year with the 30 other Raiders. How important was that mentality, those guys who are football addicts to you?
I think that's extremely important. Our scouts did a good job of going out and collecting information to find guys that are good teammates, that, you know, love the game of football, that fit what it is, the Raiders' DNA. you know, we were able to get three players in the draft that were captains at their school. You know, that's Brock, Tommy Eichenberg, you know, and Labe. You know, so that's extremely important when you get those types of guys. You know, everyone has an extreme passion for the game. I think they're going to be devoted to getting better. And that's all you can ask for them their first year.
Hey, Champ, it's Paul here. Speaking of those guys that you guys are able to draft, you drafted a lot of guys that like won awards, whether it was the best safety in the country or whether it was the best tight end, the best center. How much of that, how important is that in terms of what you just said, besides getting guys that were captains, but getting guys that were national award winners too, to join this roster and contribute to, like you just said, this DNA that you guys are building or fostering? Yeah,
we didn't necessarily go out to attack the national award winners, but production was important for us. You know, getting guys that, you know, would come in and contribute, that were selfless and understanding the team concept. I think that those were the things that kind of resonated as being important for us during this draft. And it just so happened that, you know, we had Remington and Mackey award winners that, you know, we were able to draft. And, you know, that's a testament to them. And we're excited to get them here and allow them to get acclimated into our environment.
Champ, Levi Edwards. On day two and day three, you had the opportunity to call a couple of those draft picks and let them know that they were going to be Raiders. Can you just describe how powerful that moment is just on the other end of the phone, listening to those interactions? And what do you think that tells about the character of these guys that you're drafting as well?
Well, you know, first of all, I just want to thank Tom Telesco for allowing me to make those calls. You know, for those players that get that call on draft day, you know, however long they've played this game, you know, how all the waking up early in the morning, you know, staying up late at night to study, it culminates into the moment where they're sitting there anxiously awaiting a phone call from one of the 32 teams in hopes they get their name called to be drafted. You know, so there's a lot of built up emotion, a lot of relief, and also a lot of excitement. You know, and anytime I get a chance or anytime Tom or I get a chance to pass the phone to AP, it's kind of hard for those guys to be even keel when he gets the phone, because he evokes kind of an excitement and an enthusiasm out of them.
Hey, Champ, how unusual is it for a Jim Thorpe Award winner to be available in round seven? And what did you guys like about Trey Taylor?
No, I think the thing that we saw with him, first of all, you know, he was, speaking of his character and things outside of football, you know, he's top-notch work ethic. You know, he's a leader both on and off the field. He exemplifies everything you want from a teammate and a person. And then you turn on a tape and you see a guy that, you know, plays the game the right way, has a physicality about his game. I think he had three interceptions last year. You know, and we saw a guy that can come in, you know, get acclimated to our system, potentially contribute on defense, but also come in and have value on special teams and fourth down. And that was important for us. And if you look at, you know, any of our later round draft picks and most of the additions that we had, we know that for a player to get, you know, to get on the field early on, they have to have versatility and they got to be able to contribute on special teams.
Hey, Champ, it's Paul again. On a personal level, did you have any type of relationship with Tom Telesco before he interviewed and came in? And then secondly to that, how awkward or not awkward, how easy, how uneasy was it when he came in and you know, you were essentially the interim GM anyway, and then to be able to kind of accept the role going forward?
Very good question, Paul. I did not know Tom extremely well. I went to a few symposiums where he was the speaker at. So got a chance to get some nuggets of wisdom from him, you know, at the symposium that he spoke. You know, obviously him being in division, you know of him, was really close with JoJo Wooden, who is over here with us right now. When we first, you know, got together, you know, he laid out expectations, you know, for me, and I was transparent with him about, you know, how I viewed the team and some of the needs and some of the places that I thought we needed to do to make this team better. I was able to check my ego, right, and put this team first. You know, not it's not about me. It's really about, you know, Raider Nation, the alumni, you know, to try to put the, you know, our best product forward so that we can win football games for, you know, this city and Raider Nation, you know. But Tom is easy to talk to, you know, and I think ultimately he wants the best for me. And I want the best for him and this football team. And it's, my job is to support him in all that we do as we move forward.
All right, so that was a portion of Champ Kelly. There was more to that. I like what he said there at the end. You know, he's the interim GM, and Tom Telesco gets hired, and he stays within the organization, and he is the type of guy who's going to work for the team to make the team better. Champ's a really good guy. People around the league really respect him, gets along with everybody. He's a good, sharp football mind, and the fact that he didn't leave to go somewhere else and he's on Tom Telesco's team and connected to Dave Ziegler before that and some of the success that Dave had. And Dave had a lot of success with some players that he was able to draft here. I thought the cohesion and all that was very important. Nicely done there. I'm happy we decided to play that. I didn't hear that. That's really good. Kevin Ioli, the best combat sports insider on Canelo and the fight and what happened. Good boxing weekend. Not just Canelo here in Vegas. In a way, the monster of Japan fought and won a great fight. My conversation with Kevin Ioli coming up next. If you want to get in on the announcement, the Raiders and Costa Mesa, the Raiders will eventually make this official, and we'll be able to give you more information here on the flagship of the Silver and Black.
Getting it back out for a shot. It's blocked. Zibanejad towards the net. Knockdown. Trocheck scores! He scores! Vincent Trocheck wins game two in double overtime.
Rangers win. Vegas Golden Knights are done. Raiders in Costa Mesa. Raider Nation, California. Cool weather. Raider Nation, global. Global, all over the world. Great to be here on the flagship as we continue on. If you want to get through, we'll have the thing on this topic is we don't have a lot of information other than the vote last night. Vinny Bonsignor was on, Q's talking about it. Vic Taffer, you heard some of the press conference there with Champ Kelly. When there's more information that we can get officially from the Raiders, we'll let you know on that. But again, I think a lot of Raider fans are excited about any news that is positive for the Silver and Black, and I believe the biggest positive news for the Raiders over the last couple of days and weeks has been the free agents on top of the draft picks. Tom Telesco was very active in free agency. Free agency is important to get a former Pro Bowl offensive lineman, a former quarterback who's still young, 27, and Gardner Minshew, to go out and get players, two receivers, veteran receivers, who by all accounts should make the team. Not that they can't lose one of them. One of them can get beat out. That always could happen in camp. But I really believe the Raiders now, the one glaring need, I think need, is corner. Veteran corner, if Tom Telesco believes there's an opportunity to go out there and get one. And look, there's only so much money going around after June 1st with the Jimmy Garoppolo money opening up for the Jimmy Garoppolo mistake that he made that gave the Raiders a little bit more leeway. This is all about money now. Do the Raiders have some more money after they're going to sign these rookies and free agents to go out and get maybe one more big one? I'm looking at the list of 100 available free, the 100 available free agents left. You can see that at NFL.com. Some good ones. There's some people like, where's Hunter Renfro? How come no one's signing Hunter Renfro? I mean, what's going on with Hunter Renfro? Right? You look at some of the other players around this league. There's some good players that are still out there. I wasn't ringside. I was pretty close at the fight. Canelo Mungia. Kevin Ioli was ringside, one of the best boxing MMA combat sports writers in the world. KevinIoli.com is where you can find him as he joins us on the flagship of the Raiders. And our teams are gone, man. Our teams are gone overall. So with Kevin Ioli, who's a great friend, as we're getting him up here, this is a big deal overall on what's happening with boxing right here. Kevin, kind enough to join us. Kevin, good to talk to you. Wow, just let's go back. What an unbelievable weekend for boxing.
Oh, my God. Saturday night, we got Canelo fighting for the undisputed title. Noya Inoue in Japan fighting for the undisputed title. And then we got 2 weeks, we have another undisputed title fight.
Yeah, the Inoue fight, before we get back to Canelo, is amazing because I was fortunate enough to see him in Vegas once already, and I walked out and I couldn't believe what I saw. And then to see him get knocked down early and then come back and end it with the knockout for a legacy. I like undefeated guys. We've talked about that over the decades. Just a really important moment in a young global fighter's career. And now his presence got to be made heard again here in the United States.
Yeah, you know, JT, I tell you, this kid, I think, you know, we hear about great fighters and everything, but this kid is beyond a great fighter. He is one of the all-timers. I mean, I think he ranks up there among the top fighters who ever lived. That's how good this kid is, and it's really sad. You know, he's a major rock star in Japan. There were 55,000 people there with a gate that of U.S. dollars was about $22 million. But think about that. How many fighters in the United States can draw a $22 million gate? And this kid did it in Japan today.
So with Inoue going forward and having this iconic victory, what's next with his career overall? What does he need to do? How does he have to navigate into the boxing world and get on bigger stages, even though that stage at the Tokyo Dome was pretty big?
Yeah, the last big fight there was Mike Tyson and Buster Douglas 34 years ago. Yeah. So that should tell you a little bit about the stage, right? They don't use that arena for just any boxing match, right? Just the biggest of the big. And, you know, I don't know that there's anything he has to do to get any bigger. I mean, you know, he's already moved up 5 weight classes. He's won titles in 4 weight divisions. I mean, he is he and Bud Crawford have lapped the field, basically, in terms of the great fighters. He's, you know, the two of them are just beyond everybody else. But he is really remarkable. The only sad thing is, you know, that he hasn't fought but a handful of times in the U.S. And, and casual boxing fans who just watch when it's, you know, maybe the big fights on pay-per-view, they have not seen this kid. And they are really, I'm just telling you, you think of, you know, a combination of Mike Tyson with the power and Floyd Mayweather with the speed and put them together and you have Noya Inoue at 122 pounds. Just incredible.
What are you concerned about with him moving up in weight? Because boxers move up in weight. That's just the natural progression. But being a flyweight and what he could do in the future, he can only go up so far, and he'll be tempted to move up with some of the bigger fighters and bigger names. What could happen long term?
Yeah, I think, you know, there some people are saying, oh, what about having to fight Loma? What about having to fight Tank Davis? But those guys are too big, and I think it's unrealistic. I mean, he's at 122 right now. He started at minimum weight, so he's already up 5 weight classes. And I think featherweight, really, 126 is going to be his limit. So he was the undisputed bantamweight champion. He is the undisputed super bantamweight champion. And if he can go to featherweight, which is a very live division, and win the undisputed title at featherweight, I mean, that puts him in the category of the greatest fighters. I mean, he's already there, but that would just cement it, you know, to ever do it. I mean, to, in this day and age, to be able to unify titles, you know how hard that is. You've been going to fight. You and I have talked for years about how difficult it is to get fighters to fight unification fights, let alone undisputed title fights. And this kid is unified in 2 divisions and is probably going to try to do it in a 3rd.
Kevin Ioli joins us. Check out his new site. It's a must. You have to follow it. If you're into MMA and boxing, you'll get the best coverage in the world at KevinIoli.com. So let's go back to Canelo and Munguia and all the bad talk and bad blood with Oscar De La Hoya and Canelo. You covered Canelo's entire career and De La Hoya's entire career when De La Hoya was also his promoter and manager. How bad was it? Because it felt real to me. Didn't feel like it was hype to sell some more pay-per-views. It really felt like there was something down to the core. How'd you see it?
Yeah, no, 100%. You nailed it. I mean, they do not like each other. And I think it's more Canelo does not like Oscar rather than Oscar doesn't like Canelo. You know, Oscar's kind of, you know, they were both great fighters. And it's hard to say which one of them was the better fighter when they were at their peaks. They, you know, both phenomenal fighters.
But Canelo's like a detail guy, dots your I's, cross your T's, and Oscar's not. And they just have that sort of different, you know, approach to life and personality. And I think Canelo really, you know, was annoyed by a lot of the things that Oscar did in his career. Twice when Canelo had fights, Oscar went into rehab, you know, during fight week. And, you know, that annoyed Canelo to no end. And he's, you know, they've had a good relationship. He signed a long-term deal with DAZN that was going to be 11 fights, and I think it was $385 million, if I remember the numbers correctly,
yeah.
In 2018. But in 2020, he ends up suing to break the contract, and they've been split ever since. And the anger and the animosity between them is definitely real.
Why do you think Canelo didn't want to knock him out after putting him down in the fourth round? I mean, Mungia fought hard, and I love him, and he's progressing. But it was another fight that I thought that Canelo had 17,400 fans there in a pay-per-view. He put a boxer down, and I think he could have finished him. I've been to enough championship fights where he could have got him in the seventh, eighth, ninth. Do you think he stepped off the gas later in the fight there because he didn't want to take a big chance and maybe get caught with a big shot?
I don't, JT, but if you look at Canelo's recent career, that was his fifth consecutive decision win. And that is the first time in his career that he's gone five consecutive fights without finishing somebody. Mm-hmm. You know, he's 33 years old now. So not that he's declining, but, you know, he's certainly not at that apex that he was a couple of years ago. And that one of the first things to go is, you know, you lose that little bit of speed, right? Mm-hmm. Canelo, but also, I think this is fair to say, Canelo is a counterpuncher, and he was looking for the opportunity. And, you know, Mungia just kept up a steady 1-2, 1-2, 1-2, and he kept, you know, doing that. And it was hard for Canelo to find, I think, this, like, really big, clear opening. I thought Canelo boxed brilliantly. I thought he looked good in the fight. But he didn't get that opening where Mungia just overcommitted. I thought Mungia fought a really controlled fight. He got away a little bit from the jab in the second part of the fight, which may have hurt him. But I felt like he fought a smart fight. He didn't allow Canelo to have a lot of openings to take advantage. So when he got a little wild in the fourth round and was trying to had Canelo pinned in the corner and trying to hurt him, Canelo countered him, and I think Mungia learned from that.
Kevin Ioli, as we wrap it up, so Dana White rewards fighters for the best fight of the night with a bonus. And I really think, as I'm more of a boxing guy than MMA, and you've made an unbelievable business career covering both, and I just think that a lot of the UFC fighters want to finish the fight in glory and get knockouts and submissions and all that. You know, we covered Floyd's career together, and Floyd, if he was up six rounds to none, you weren't going to see him take any risks along the way. Has anything changed that much, Kevin, as younger demographic MMA fans go into all of these big cards? Now we're into the 300s, 301, 302, Conor coming back, where they have a taste for these great cards, and Dana has to continue to try to stack these great cards to keep up with the recent past.
Yeah, I mean, Dana has done a great job creating interest in a sport when he purchased it that very few people cared about, right? So now we're, you know, what is it, 23 years later, he has built this. It's a $13 billion company. I mean, it's just that is remarkable.
Amazing.
What they did. And I think that was because he said, you know what, I love boxing. Let me take what works and what was good from boxing and keep it, and let me get rid of the things that people in boxing didn't like. And what were the things people didn't like, JT? Stripping people of titles, fighters fighting conservatively, fighters not fighting to win. So you have a sport where the whole culture of the sport now, Dana doesn't really have to do anything. The entire culture of the sport is based that way. They want to seek out the best opposition. They want to finish fights, and they get upset if they don't. And you've got to give Dana, and also Lorenzo Fertitta, he deserves a lot of credit too, the Station Casinos owner, who was the former owner of the UFC. He also had a big role in the way the culture of the sport evolved and helping to get these fighters to fight that way.
Wrapping it up with Kevin Ioli. All right, Kevin, give me a big update for boxing and MMA. I think fans love hearing you and loving your impact here on what to look forward to in the next 6 months to a year or the rest of the year, because we just came off a Canelo fight. Everybody wants to know about Tyson Fury. Everybody loves the stars like Conor McGregor. Why should we be excited in the world of combat sports maybe over the next 4 to 6 months?
Well, there's a lot of great fights lined up, and August 3rd is going to be a good boxing one. But I did a story just a couple of seconds ago, JT, that I posted a betting story. Oleksandr Usyk, the favorite over Tyson Fury now. Fury was a minus 240 favorite at one point. Now Usyk is a $1.30 favorite. And interestingly enough, the sportsbook director that I talked to told me that all the sharp money is on Usyk and the public money is on Tyson Fury. So that was kind of interesting. And, of course, when you talk UFC, International Fight Week in Las Vegas is June 29th this year, and Conor McGregor is back. And he hasn't fought since 21, and I think that's something that fans are really going to want to look forward to. But I'll end with this. I think Turki Al-Sheikh of Saudi Arabia, he put together a card on August the 3rd, Terrence Crawford versus Madrimov at 154 for a title, a fight that's going to be phenomenal. Virgil Ortiz against Tim Zhu. Deontay Wilder, if he wins his next fight, is going to fight Jared Anderson. There's a ton of big fights on that card, August 3rd in Los Angeles. So that's a boxing one people should look forward to.
Last one, follow-up. Will Conor McGregor be in the best shape of his life, take this seriously after the movie career, all the money he's spending on yachts and silk sheets? Could we? Because when I watched the documentaries on him and Conor trained, and he really trained early in his career, I got a lot of respect for him. And the way he trained for Floyd Mayweather, he took it very seriously here. Should we expect Conor McGregor to want to go out with not only a win, but a great performance as he gets into the next stage of his life?
You know, I think the question really there, JT, is physically, how is he? This injury that he had was a very, when he broke his leg in that Dustin Poirier fight, it was really difficult to heal. And we got to see if he still has the kind of movement. Conor was quick. That was one of his big selling points. And he hit very hard, both punches and kicks. And now we don't know what his movement is going to be like because of his leg. And I think there's a very real concern there that he may not be the same again. I think he'll have a lot of muscle and he'll look good. They're fighting at 170 pounds. But whether that translates into fighting performance remains to be seen because of his injury.
Kevin, tell everyone where they can find your work, please.
Well, I am on X. I was going to say Twitter, but X at Kevin I, K-E-V-I-N-I. My website is Kevin Ioli, KevinIole.com. And I'm also there on Kevin Ioli at Facebook and on Instagram.
You got it, my friend. I'll see you soon. Thanks for the time tonight.
Thanks,
appreciate
you. Appreciate it.
Thank you, brother. Kevin Ioli. So one of the things he said at the end there is very concerning to me. The Saudis, Saudi Arabia is now taking over boxing. They took over LIV Golf. LIV Golf now made news today because you're allowed to make trades from LIV Golf team. So if you're a John Rahm, you're on a team. I think the team concept at LIV is stupid. I don't watch LIV Golf, let alone watch it for the teams. I just care who has the lowest score. But the Saudis have been putting on some unbelievable boxing cards. And now the Saudis might take over boxing because Saudi Arabia can end up spending more to pay the fighters. And what happens if they start taking over boxing and everyone's like, cool, wherever the most money is, I'll go fight in Saudi Arabia. So they're doing it with LIV Golf. They're doing it with other sports. And now they're trying to do it with boxing. But the cards this year are great. Boxing's back, everybody. I never thought it was dead. I don't think it's going away. It's the oldest sport we have, along with thoroughbred horse racing, older than baseball, everything out. Our two oldest sports in the history of sports are boxing and horse racing. Neither one's going away. And boxing's had some pretty good cards. And now Dana White's going to pivot to Conor McGregor. And Dana broke that news at Max Crosby's foundation. They were doing a live auction for UFC 303, and then Dana grabbed the microphone and said, hey, in front of Max Crosby, he said, hey, I'm going to offer more. This is going to be the return of Conor McGregor, and the whole room started bidding more for that. So that's a big UFC card that's coming up on the other side, and we love boxing and what it does. Kevin Ioli is one of the best. Go to KevinIoli.com and follow him. He's another guy that moved on from Yahoo to his own site, and when you move to your own site, like, I launched this YouTube page. Why? My son said, Dad, you need a little bit of YouTube vibe. Everybody else is doing it. Look at McAfee. Look at this show. So we're building it slowly. You know, every day we're getting more and more people to join in. Kevin Ioli left Yahoo to bring to his own site and to own his own site. So a lot of people do that. Let's support Kevin and go subscribe to KevinIoli.com. When we come back, more on the Raiders and this Costa Mesa news. What's happening in the rest of free agency? Some of the other players that could be on the Raiders list and radar. Q's here in studio today, so Q's coming up next with a big show. And we got basketball tonight. My Knicks are playing. Go to La Casa Cigars for live entertainment to watch sports. It's incredible. Tivoli Village, Mike, La Casa Cigars, my favorite cigar lounge. Go in there, watch sports and live entertainment 7 nights a week.
Careful what you wish for. As the Cavaliers get Boston, and like most of the teams that have walked into TD Garden, they get blown off the floor in game number one. The clock hits triple zeros, and it is over. The Celtics strike first in the Eastern Conference semifinals. The final score, Boston 120, Cleveland 95.
Celtics radio, I don't think the Celtics are going to have much problem with the Cavaliers. I think they'll win in five. Big game tonight, Knicks-Pacers. On TNT, and that's going to be an interesting game here because the Knicks are a 4.5-point to 5-point favorite, and the Knicks got a little help from the refs. So even I'll admit that as a diehard Knicks fan in the last game, and I don't think the refs are going to do them any favors in this game. Pacers kind of have to win this game because if they don't, I don't think they can beat the Knicks 4 out of 5. I don't care if you're the road team. You go down 2-0, you're in trouble, and the Pacers are going to play tonight like it's game 7. That is a big deal. It completely is depressing that the Golden Knights are out. If the Golden Knights weren't out, they'd be playing tonight, and we'd have 2 weeks of Golden Knights hockey on our flagship station in this building, and now we have nothing. Notice how much hockey talk you've heard in Vegas since they've been eliminated. That'd be none. That'd be none because we're not Detroit, we're not Boston, we're not Toronto. That's who we are. So it's the Oilers and the Canucks. Oilers, Canucks, Western second round, game one. And we'll see what happens here. Vancouver's very good. I like the Oilers to win this series. I think this would be an interesting time if Connor McDavid can kind of go on a roll and get this going. I mentioned what the Raiders are going to be able to do now going forward with a move to get a cornerback if they're going to do that. So Tom Telesco will have the opportunity to go out there and make a decision on what's going to happen here. I would suggest everybody go to NFL.com, and they have their best 100 available players still there. And then you can look and kind of pick and choose if you think there's one for the Raiders deal. Stephon Gilmore is the one that everybody seems to talk about, and he's an aging cornerback. But I like aging cornerbacks who can play. And if you can find a cut-down cornerback and a player that can come out there and potentially start in the preseason, that would be good. Champ Kelly did not comment on the coin toss. I can promise you, working for the Raiders, that there wasn't a coin toss for Brock Bowers. I can pretty much promise you that didn't happen. And if it did happen, no one's going to admit it there. If it's in jest, if it's a light comment about that, Brock Bowers fell to the Raiders at that position, and he turned out to be, I think, going into this year, one of the best players that could fall to an organization. Now, he fell to the Jets, and he fell to Denver. I saw Bo Nix was on a sports talk radio show today, just like the formula. Do everything to help the Broncos and get a Bronco quarterback on. And this thing in Kansas City is a big deal. Chiefs wide receiver Rasheed Rice is a suspect in a legal assault that injured a man at a Dallas nightclub earlier this week. I said they should have caught him when he walked off that freeway after the accident and didn't check on the young boy, the 4.5-5-year-old boy that was injured. The newspaper citing law enforcement officials reported the officers were dispatched early Monday morning, that's late Sunday night, to a nightclub after reports of an assault. A man was taken to a hospital with non-life-threatening injuries, including swelling. And when you look at this, Rasheed Rice seems to be a kid completely out of control, swelling on the face as the individual who claimed he was assaulted. Police said no charges related to the alleged assault have been filed as of today, but that could change. And the Chiefs said they had no comment. Look, when the Raider players get in trouble, Chiefs players get in trouble, I just want to end the show by saying this. 99% of the guys in the league are great guys. They don't get in trouble. They don't get arrested. They don't drive insane. They don't hurt people. They don't have bad intentions. But when it happens, we got a report on it. Rice is 24. He was arrested in April after his involvement in a six-car crash, which he was racing on a freeway in Dallas that left several people injured, including one young boy who he didn't check on. When he didn't go check on him and walked off the freeway with his buddies, I said, just get rid of the guy, because they brought in a new receiver now just as good. Q's here in the building. He'll join you next. He'll have a great show available. I got a podcast coming up with Looney. If you could subscribe, JT and Looney, wherever you get your podcast. And then on top of that, the really big next couple of shows we're going to do is we're counting down to the Raiders schedule release. And that was supposed to be tomorrow. Rumors tomorrow, but they pushed it to next week. Not the Raiders. The NFL did that. Have a great rest of the day, everybody. Appreciate Bobby running the show. Thanks to Jeff Sherman, Kevin Ioli, and Vinny Bonsignor, who will try to get on again. Have a great rest of your day. Appreciate everybody listening. I greatly appreciate you listening to the show. Thank you very much.
Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.